Once a year, billionaires and world leaders meet in Switzerland and set out to solve the world's problems. How are they doing so far? This is Brief Before Impact. Hey, welcome everyone. I am Matt Parker and thanks for joining me for this episode. I'm going to be diving into answering the question of what is the World Economic Forum? What does it do? And what are they attempting to achieve in the coming years? You may have seen on the news every year, this place in Switzerland called Davos and a number of private planes land on an airstrip, bunch of rich guys and gals get together, do a lot of conferences, do a lot of talking, and then we never hear from them until another year. I want to dive into who this organization is, what they're trying to do, a little bit about the good of them, and obviously the bad and criticism about them. But before we do that, let me jump into a quick ad break, and then we'll get to work. All right, welcome back, everyone. So let me just give a definition. If you weren't familiar with what the World Economic Forum is, after this episode, you'll be an expert, or pretty close. The World Economic Forum, according to their website, is the international organization for public-private cooperation. The forum engages the foremost political, business, cultural, and other leaders of society to shape global, regional, and industry agendas. It was established in 1971 for a nonprofit foundation. It's in Geneva, Switzerland. It's independent, impartial, and not tied to any special interests. The forum strives in all its efforts to demonstrate entrepreneurship in the global public interest, while upholding the highest standards of governance. Moral and intellectual integrity is at the heart of everything it does. That is a terrific definition it gave itself there. So essentially, just by that definition alone, we can assume, okay, we've got some politicians getting together, some industry leaders around the world from different countries all coming together to share ideas, according to them, in the public's global public interest. Okay, let me outline some criticism as, but someone who's going to say that we need the World Economic Forum. Okay, this is according to William Burkwhite, writing for Brookings Institute. And he says, quote, "It's appropriate to criticize the World Economic Forum as an elitist gathering of the super rich. Billionaires lobby to get all access badges for the week and then share self-important selfies with the word Davos prominently visible. At plenary sessions, the values of capitalism are extolled, risks to the global economy considered, and the relationships between economic trends and governmental policies debated. At invitation-only receptions, at exclusive piano bars, and on the ski slopes, cars are exchanged, introductions made, and business deals concluded. On its face, Davos appears to be a meeting out of touch with the times, focused more on privilege than social change, economic displacement, or cross-cutting global challenges. It is, however, in these precarious times that we need Davos more than ever. Economic and corporate leadership on the global governance challenges is so urgently needed today for two reasons. First, political leadership around the world is stalled or gridlocked, preventing progress. And second, the global challenges we face, from climate emergency to the perils of populist nationalism, from the regulation of cyberspace and the ownership of data to the dangers of opportunities of mass human movements, cannot be solved without action by wealth holders and decision makers of the corporate community." So, in Mr. Burkwhite's own words, yep, this is a big group of super rich elitist folks who think pretty highly of themselves. However, the world in all its challenges it's facing needs these people to get together and come up with some ideas. So, as you can imagine, what possible things could go wrong when you have politicians who make policies being influenced by super rich donors, you know, commentators, people who influence literally entire industries or parts of the world? You could certainly see this as an opportunity for some type of corruption, perhaps. But that's not even the biggest concern that I tend to read whenever I dug into all this research about the World Economic Forum. Really, it was about the intent and the goal of this institution amongst and their ties and partnerships with others, such as the United Nations, and what they're hoping to see and hoping to change in just as human society if we've known it up until this point. Let me dig into these. And there are some more conspiratorial criticisms. And I'm going to like dial out a handful of these examples. And we're going to hopefully show how while the World Economic Forum is trying to promote on the surface a very positive thing, it's possible, not claiming it is, but it's possible there's something, a greater and more devious plot behind it. Now, this is according to CNBC. The World Economic Forum has also been subject of unfounded conspiracy theories, which it is trying to address head-on. Referencing the World Economic Forum's previous theme, their theme was, quote, the Great Reset. And I'm going to dial into this here in a little bit. The Great Reset, hundreds of thousands of posts has circulated on social media in the recent years, many appearing to claim that the global elite were planning to use the coronavirus to bring about total economic collapse. Quote, we, like many other organizations, have been the target of misinformation campaigns, and that is something that we were very proactively trying to work towards combating. This is from Saidiya Zahidi, with managing director at the World Economic Forum. Again, she says, we believe in facts, we believe in science, we believe in evidence, and we believe in expertise. And that's what the 100 or so experts that are gathered at this meeting, along with business leaders and political leaders, that's what they are going to provide. End quote. Now, so protesters, activists, and people on the front lines of inequality have sought to challenge the World Economic Forum over its, quote, empty rhetoric, accusing Davos of representing a symbol of a failed era that should be left behind. A report that was published by Oxfam, that's a global charity, they found that over 573 people became new billionaires during the COVID, the coronavirus pandemic. And that's at a rate of about one new billionaire for every 30 hours. The brief entitled Profiting from Pain, the report, expects that 263 million additional people will fall into extreme poverty this year at a rate of 1 million people every 33 hours. So, okay, there's some criticisms to the World Economic Forum. They do a lot of talking. They high-five each other, say, hey, we got these great ideas, but nothing really changes from it, according to some of their critics. And certainly, the biggest challenge they had is, it sounds like, is more of a narrative that they've been promoting these last several years called the Great Reset. If you haven't heard of this, I admittedly had only seen it, read it once in an article headline and kept moving because whenever I see the word economic, I just kind of my eyes glaze over. But I continue to dig into this idea and this theme that they continue to promote. And I want to share with you in very brief, hardly the nuts and bolts of every aspect of the Great Reset, what they're trying to achieve. But I think you'll get the idea of what it is. And certainly why people would be concerned about it, perhaps even laying some conspiratorial criticisms to the World Economic Forum. The World Economic Forum's executive director, a gentleman named Klaus Schwab, in his own words, demands that, quote, the world must act jointly and swiftly to revamp all aspects of our societies and economies, from education to social contracts and working conditions. Every country, from the United States to China, must participate, and every industry, from oil and gas to tech, must be transformed. In short, we need a great reset of capitalism. That's a pretty bold comment in my mind when the first time I read it. He's basically asking the world as it is needs to be completely redone. So where's this really coming from? The agenda of the Great Reset touches on many key issues that are just facing the world. That's where this agenda came from. This is according to Raja Mohan. He's a director, Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. Out of these issues that are facing the world and how they've crafted this agenda for the World Economic Forum, the Great Reset, three stood out to Raja Mohan. He points them out here. First, it's the question of reforming capitalism. Davos has been at the forefront for calling for stakeholder capitalism that looks beyond the traditional corporate focus on maximizing profit for shareholders. So let me, if you've never heard the term stakeholder capitalism, let me just give you a quick definition. Stakeholder capitalism, it's corporations are oriented to serve the interest of all their stakeholders. Who are those people? Among the key stakeholders are customers, suppliers, employees, shareholders, and local communities. Under this system, a company's purpose is to create long-term value and not to maximize profits and enhance shareholder value at the cost of other stakeholder groups. Essentially, they're saying only focusing on shareholders and maximizing those profits negates all these other folks, employees, suppliers, customers, and their interests, and it's unfair. That's kind of the bottom line here. That's the criticism. Okay. Second of these issues that stands out, Davos is certainly right to focus on the deepening climate crisis. Climate skeptics have been ousted from Washington, and President Biden has rejoined the 2015 Paris Accord on mitigating climate change. So, as many multinational and international organizations, climate change is always being talked about as this apocalyptic collapse that's on it. We're on the verge of it, and it's imminent. We're not debating that here today. It's not the point. However, I just want to emphasize that this is a theme that the World Economic Forum talks about a great deal, and they focus on it with how it is being affected by the climate crisis, how it's being affected by the shareholder capitalism that you and I are all very familiar with. Here's the challenge. There are very well-respected skeptics to climate change, and essentially there are a large number of folks who call them those skeptics. They're not just skeptics, they're deniers. They're trying to actually destroy the planet. We have to save it. And the only way to do so is by reshaping capitalism as we know it. So as you can imagine, these are kind of radical ideas. I'm not claiming they're good or bad, just stating a fact as I see it. These are radical changes that they're promoting. And I'll point out the fact, especially from political conservatives versus political liberals. Conservatives tend to see how the measures needed to curb like greenhouse gas emissions, they imply government intervention and they imply internationally binding treaties. Those tend to go against the conservative ideals of individual freedom, limited government, and free markets. So there are many conservative voices who say, yes, there is man-made climate change. The challenge here that they tend to come up against is that any way to curb the emissions that are causing such climate change tend to imply this government intervention and international binding treaties. Those types of actions are typically against the ideals that conservatives hold, the individual freedoms, smaller governments, you know, free markets, etc. So a third and final point that Mohan points out is that third is the growing difficulty of global cooperation that Davos wants to promote. The era of great power harmony that accompanied the liberalization of the global economy at the turn of the 1990s has yielded place to intense contestation. The contestation is not just political, but increasingly economic and technological. And this is absolutely true. We're able to witness that, especially in this year. Or even since the COVID pandemic got started, but especially since Russia has invaded Ukraine. Today, according to Wilson Center, the United States and China, often with Russia at its side, are competing to shape security architectures as well as norms and practices worldwide, including trade, investment regimes, the development, regulation of new technological infrastructures. These frictions will play out over decades, not only in Beijing, Washington, and Moscow, but in Africa, in Europe, the Arctic, outer space, cyberspace. So this is a true point that they're pointing out. There is a difficulty for global cooperation. So whether it is a clever gimmick or a serious attempt to produce structural changes in the organization of global capitalism, the initiative, the Great Reset itself, has set off furious conspiracy theories on the right and contemptuous dismissals from the left. Again, Mohan explains why this is occurring. In his own words, quote, the right, political right, sees the World Economic Forum arguments about restructuring the global economy as a dangerous attempt to impose socialism and dismantle the traditional society or what remains of it. The political left scoffs at Davos, the Davos man's talk on the crisis of capitalism. It points to the complicity of the Davos Forum in promoting policies that have brought the world to the current impasse and question its capacity to produce solutions, according to Mohan. So when we evaluate what the Great Reset is, in short, to me, it appears like it is an attempt for a radical change. And I wanted to know, how would this radical change actually be fulfilled, in short? You know, we're coming off of a couple of years of a global pandemic. We're not here to talk about the origins or how the governments handled that, anything like that. We can all agree it was pretty terrible for most folks, whether it's just being isolated or, heaven forbid, losing a loved one. It certainly produced years of damage to our economies that we've yet to even see. We're already experiencing. So the pandemic was terrible. Then we think about how this agenda for the Great Reset could be parallel to what we can view now. And I wanted to know, how is the World Economic Forum, it has this Great Reset idea, but how could it execute such an idea? And it's often looks at these kind of institutions are often partnered with others. And so it turns out the United Nations and the World Economic Forum have a very much a collaborative partnership. And I'm going to highlight just a piece of how this would work out, because the United Nations has an agenda titled Agenda 2030. And this is essentially just a goal, a number of initiatives they like to accomplish. And in short, Agenda 2030 is a plan of action for people, planet, and prosperity. It also seeks to strengthen universal peace and larger freedom. We recognize the eradicating poverty in all its forms and dimensions, including extreme poverty, is the greatest global challenge and an indispensable requirement for sustainable development. All countries and all stakeholders acting in collaborative partnership will implement this plan. End quote. Okay. Very nice little definitions. We're talking about eradicating poverty, universal peace, et cetera, et cetera. Here's what captured my attention. All countries and all stakeholders acting in collaborative partnership will implement this plan. As you can imagine, the United Nations, a lot of countries are members to that body. They rarely agree unanimously on anything. So in order to execute an Agenda 2030, you have to have all these countries and stakeholders acting collaboratively. That's a tough one to match. Now, parallel that with the Great Reset, essentially radically transforming capitalism as we know it. Well, how would this even come about? If I can just use personal anecdotes of what we've seen since the pandemic. We've seen, and at least in America, a flood of money in order to subside, bridge, help people get through those moments when government lockdowns eliminated businesses and ended them as they were. And so the government flooded our economy with money through just, you know, again, kind of different versions of unemployment, more or less. People got paychecks, whether they had a job or didn't. And this is already causing an effect to inflation that we can all witness every time we look at the gas station or the grocery prices. But what about the ideas of globally? You know, we're experiencing that in the United States. Obviously, inflation is a problem in other countries. But what other real-world examples can we highlight? I've got just three for you, I think, would be anecdotes to what the Great Reset is, what the Agenda 2030 would look like, how you would actually go from talking about something to getting it done. This is a recent piece that Fox Business News picked up, because the World Economic Forum calls to reduce private vehicles by eliminating ownership. World Economic Forum says steps need to be taken to reduce reliance on critical metals amid green energy push. So you're going to hear me talk about green energy for the next few minutes. Quote, the transition from fossil fuels to renewables will need large supplies of critical metals such as cobalt, lithium, nickel, just to name a few, the forum said in a report. The shortages of these critical minerals could raise the cost of clean energy technologies. So that's kind of interesting, especially for you Americans, as you can imagine. Just think about the geography, topography of the United States versus certain European countries. Certain European countries, you could really live your entire life in cities, traveling even from country to country, never owning a vehicle. It's totally possible. I spent a good amount of time in Europe myself. It's a walking culture in some parts of Europe. That is not the case in the overwhelming majority of the United States. Cars are such an important part, especially for just more rural areas. Maybe you could certainly get away with it in larger cities, not owning a vehicle. But the World Economic Forum says we need to reduce private vehicles by eliminating ownership. Ownership. These are words that especially libertarian-minded or even conservative-minded folks hold to great value. You know, again, individual liberty and so forth. Now the World Economic Forum says we just need to start eliminating that. And it's under the thread of transitioning over to renewable energy. Okay. Another example, if you hadn't seen this, let me point out there have been massive protests in the Netherlands. So farmers have been protesting in the Netherlands, and they're showing just how messy this climate transition will be, according to Time Magazine. A standoff between Dutch farmers and the Dutch government. It's causing havoc in the Netherlands this summer. Protesters have withheld deliveries from grocery stores, smeared manure outside the home of the agricultural minister, and blocked highways with hay bales and tires. So you gotta ask, why are Dutch farmers so upset? Well, what's driving the dispute? According to the article, manure. The Netherlands' intensive livestock farming system produces an unusual excess of animal feces. When mixed with urine, those feces give off ammonia and nitrous oxide. The former, that nitrous oxide, it's a pollutant that can leak into air and water, harming local wildlife. The latter is the potent greenhouse gas that traps heat in our atmosphere. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change says nitric oxide accounts for around 6% of the global greenhouse gas emissions. In June, the Netherlands unveiled a world-leading target to halve emissions of these gases. Half. They're going to cut that in half. As well as other nitrogen compounds that come from fertilizers by 2030 to tackle their environmental and climate impacts. The government said it was leading an unavoidable transition. That's a direct quote. Unavoidable transition for agriculture. Farmers can reduce the release of nitrogen compounds by changing how they manage their cows, feeding them less protein, or using water to dilute manure, for example. But the target is expected to require a 30% reduction in overall livestock numbers. And experts say many farms will have to shut down. Farmers are demanding that the government rethink their plan before it becomes law later this year. So again, another government is under the threat of transitioning over to fossil fuels, reducing gas emissions that are causing climate change, is telling one section of their society that you no longer have the same value as you did the day before to our society, and we're going to take what you are doing, we're going to cut it in half, and the consequences are frankly not the concern, because the goal is so much more important. Now, just a quick thought from myself. You're a Dutch farmer, been working your land since you were a kid, perhaps, took over your mom and dad's farm. This is your life. And now you have a politician, perhaps that was a bureaucrat, that was just a part of a certain segment of the government, saying what you're doing is essentially destroying the planet, and so we have to, with our own expertise, take you off of, remove what you've been doing, because the goal is far better than what your lifestyle, your livelihood, your home you live in, etc., the farm you own, maybe, even this case, could even be shut down. As you can imagine, folks who are more bent on individual liberty and small governments might not take to this too well. Certainly, the Dutch farmers have not with their protesting. Last point I'm going to be making, and then we'll wrap this up. Forbes magazine wrote an article recently titled, Biden says the quiet part out loud about the energy transition. President Biden took some heat for saying the quiet part on the energy transition out loud. There's a press conference in Japan with the Japanese prime minister. President Biden seemed to frankly admit that high gas and diesel prices are just part of the overall plan for the transition to renewables. Direct quote, President Biden, when it comes to the gas prices, we're going through an incredible transition that is taking place. God willing, when it's over, we'll be stronger and the world will be stronger and less reliant on fossil fuels when it's over, end quote. It was a mistake since, although running prices for fossil fuel generated energy higher has always been part of the plan for Biden's Green New Deal energy policies, admitting it out loud in public was not supposed to be a part of the messaging. So, President of the United States says, yeah, these high gas prices that you're dealing with, that's all a part of our plan. We're trying to get you off those fossil fuels and get you over to buying an electric vehicle so we can get renewables going. We're just going to kind of put your feet to the fire a little bit. Obviously, I'm taking my own take on this, but I think we can look at these three examples here. World Economic Forum saying we eliminate private ownership of cars. The Netherlands telling the farmers, you're going to have to cut essentially what you've been doing by half because it's destroying our planet. Then President Biden says, yeah, all this high gas prices, that's just part of the plan so we can get over to renewable energy. This is, in my view, as evaluating the World Economic Forum and its goals, the Great Reset and United Nations Agenda 2030, this is how they're going to achieve radical transformation for their world in different countries who are more willing to act a part of this plan, this agenda, and then there's going to be certain countries that are not going to be. And this will bring me to our courses of actions, and I'll close it out. How will people and the governments that represent them interact in the future when there are these agendas by international institutions being promoted and pushed throughout societies? Most likely, as a course of action, in my assessment, is nation states will act with caution and skepticism of one another when signing on to any binding resolutions that commit large resources to an objective. Most dangerous course of action, in my view, is an unelected group of bureaucrats are given power to make decisions for millions of Americans without the voice of the people being heard. I find this subject very fascinating, and I'm personally always cautious and skeptical of any group that claims that they have the solutions for the world when there are so many different situations for each of us, never accounting for the individual. Now, obviously, we as a people, as a society, often have the same goals. We all want to raise our families in safe communities, have a good job, live in a peaceful place, etc. Obviously, leave the world in a better place than we got it. And I think that can be true for many of the people I've interacted around the world. That's how most folks are. My challenge is when those who have a tremendous amount of influence and power have ideas that are not allowed to go through any type of democratic process to get buy-in from the people, that's when things don't go well. For example, if any of these ideas and initiatives are going to be so overwhelmingly obvious and beneficial to everyone, I would begin expecting to see more support for them around the world. But in these a couple examples I gave you, the farmers in Netherlands, limiting private ownership of cars, high gas prices to push us all into renewable or to electric vehicles, that's not getting buy-in from the people. That's putting their feet to the fire. And most folks, at least those of you who listen to me talk, don't really buy into that too much. I know I'm not raising my hand and volunteering to live under such a regime. So my last piece of advice to all of us is really watch and be aware of the political forces domestic and abroad that seek to influence aspects and even at times influence the outcomes of our lives. So thank you for joining me. I hope you found this topic interesting. I imagine there will be more to come of it. And as always, I hope you are picking up what I'm putting down. I am Matt Parker. This is Brief Before Impact.